Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
The reaction of the UK government towards Iran, towards the attack on Israel, and the reaction of other countries around the world. Well, Heath Sloan, a Krauthammer Fellow and a member of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, he has joined us before. Heath Sloan, welcome back. Thanks for joining us again. How are you?
Thanks for having me on the show.
A great, great pleasure. So was the reaction, the involvement, everything that you would have expected?
Look, personally, I would have hoped for more. I think the mixed messaging is perhaps causing a greater concern for the future of the Israeli-UK relationship than anything else. To his credit, PM Rishi Sunak was very quick to condemn Iran's attack as reckless, and he reiterated the UK's commitment to supporting Israel's security. But the line that the Prime Minister, the Foreign Secretary, Lord Cameron, and Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer seem to be going with is that Israel needs to de-escalate immediately. And quoting Lord Cameron on radio yesterday, quote, Israel should take the win. Howard, I'm not entirely sure what win he's talking about here, just that Israel survived.
Biden saying something very similar, take the win.
Right.
What do you think they mean?
Well, I think we're setting a pretty low bar for winning here, aren't we? Just that Israel happened to survive to fight another day. Mm. But my real concern is sort of threefold. The first is that it creates a moral hazard where Iran sees there are no consequences to its actions, which will likely just make it feel emboldened to continue pushing the envelope. Secondly, it sort of sidesteps the real reason why this attack didn't kill countless Israelis, destroy vast areas of Israel, including religious sites, and that's the over $1 billion price tag that the Israeli and American taxpayer has to foot for Israel's missile defenses. And the third is, what does this actually spell out for the future of alliances if, when push comes to shove, they're not prepared to support each other in dealing a retaliatory blow to a massive attack on their sovereignty?
So the fact that, I kept getting the sense that this was slightly choreographed, not down to the detail, because I think the number of the amount of missiles, ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, mm-hmm. drones that were sent could not have been pre-negotiated. But the fact is that the Houthis didn't get involved, the Hezbollah didn't get involved. And then immediately you had Israel's allies saying, great, we did brilliantly, you guys did brilliantly, now sit down. Makes me think that there might have been a quid pro quo at some point beforehand.
Look, I've heard this argument. I think at the moment there's perhaps not enough concrete information to verify that being the case.
I love that. You just called me a conspiracy theorist in the nicest possible way.
Well, sorry about that, Howard. Look, it's possible, and we live in such a crazy reality nowadays that anything seems to be possible.
Right.
But what I would say is that given that Iran's proxies, including Hezbollah, but only to a limited extent, during the escalation on the weekend, since they were all weighing into this, I think that back on home territory here in the UK, I think there's a real case and a real energy and momentum here for the UK to finally take those concrete steps and prescribe the IRGC and Ansar Allah, which is the Houthi group. I think that it's absolutely ludicrous that the UK tolerates the promotion and membership and recruitment and funding and support for these groups to go on unabated within the UK when these are the same groups that the UK's Air Force are countering over in the Middle East. I'm not sure why it's good for the goose, but not good for the gander.
The other fascinating thing for me is where the liberal element and the ceasefire crowd are right now. Because it's very, very difficult. You really do need to employ an incredible amount of moral gymnastics to still find Israel at fault here, but not stand with Iran, but stand with Iranian people, but not because of the human rights abuses. It's very, very complicated. We do need to spare a thought for the left over this, because their life can't be very simple at the moment. Must be exhausting.
Certainly. For sure. I think there are two interesting narratives we've seen creeping out since the weekend's attack. I think the first is you have the hardened pro-Hamas, pro-Palestine camp who, regardless of who's attacking Israel, will always support it. So they're the sorts who are cheering on Iran's attacks, even as it would, you know, probably have destroyed the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa and other sites. But we'll put that aside for a moment. The other is the, like you said, the pro-hashtag ceasefire now group, who are definitely silent right now, but seem to think they have this gotcha kind of comment where they go, oh, but Israel, Iran was only retaliating to Israel striking the Iranian consulate in Syria. And I just wonder if these people have ever picked up a magazine or a book or listened to a podcast in the last, I don't know, 70 plus years to work out the history of animosity between Israel and its radical Islamist neighbors. And, you know, the conflict didn't begin with one strike on the Iranian consulate. The shadow war with Iran goes back decades at this point. So I think it's interesting that they've pivoted from ceasefire to trying to square the blame on Israel for provoking this unprecedented and extremely deadly attack.
I got so many people messaging me yesterday saying, what was Iran expected to do after Israel attacked its embassy? And I thought, wow, if you just employed that thought process to Hamas and, you know, October the 7th, we'd have a very different situation. But it's just like we're living in a completely nonsensical universe.
Absolutely. I would love to know, and we're not privy to these closed-door conversations at the diplomatic level, but I would love to know if Lord Cameron and his peers are also pressuring Khamenei and Nasrallah and their contacts with the Houthis and elsewhere to also back down and perhaps take the knee when Israel takes out their strategic assets as well? Or does it only cut one way when it's one of our allies, a Western democratic liberal country, who we're trying to tell to stand down? I would like to hope that it's a universal message, but I have my reservations about that.
What are we likely to see? I mean, I know that we don't know for sure, but if you were a betting man, what's going to happen?
I think perhaps of more interest than what comes next in terms of an Israeli response, which could be very limited in scope, because similarly, Israel may pursue a sort of Goldilocks response, nothing too big to provoke an all-out war, but still small enough to take more credible deterrence posture again. More interestingly than that, though, I think we're seeing the emergence of a new security infrastructure where Israel, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the UAE, plus Western allies, of course, the US in the region, are jointly addressing mutually concerning security threats. I think while that's an exciting change of events and demonstration of the practical working relationships that Israel now has with its neighbors who it was fighting up until a while ago, I don't think we should overbake it, right? Jordan and Saudi Arabia and UAE also don't want their own airspace to be violated by Iranian drones and cruise missiles.
Right. So, yeah, and in fact, I'm being signaled they need me out of studio because it is 9 o'clock. So I do apologize once again. I always seem to do this to you. Heath Sloan, a Krauthammer Fellow, member of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, talking to us about the reaction of the UK government towards the Iranian attack on Israel.